Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. All three of us are professional illustrators, and we've been all working for, like, what, the last 25 years or so? And we've worked with just about every major publisher in the business, and together we've published somewhere around 50 books, and we've all taught illustration at universities.
Yep. Each week we're going to bring you a different topic relating to illustration. Sometimes we're going to argue, sometimes we're going to agree, but each time you're going to learn something brand new.
Sometimes we're going to have fun.
We always have fun.
Fun is guaranteed. All right. So let's get down to it, Will. I'm looking forward to this topic. It's something that I've touched upon in my YouTube videos. I know it's something that we talked about a year or so ago in our third Thursday webinars that we used to do. So I feel like this is something that we definitely have perspective on and things to say about it. You want to introduce the topic,
and we'll just dig into it. Yeah, you and I know what this topic is, but Lee has no idea.
And so I have opinions on all things.
If I can delay him knowing what the topic is longer, then the more the better.
keep it going. My opinions are already forming, even not knowing the topic.
Okay. So I got a letter, or we got a letter at SVS from I probably shouldn't use her name because she didn't give me permission to, so I'm just not going to do that. But if she wanted me to, I'm sorry that I'm not using her name. But anyway, I'm going to read the letter really quick. It's fairly short, and then kind of introduce the topic. So she says, "Hi guys, longtime listener of 3-Point Perspective." And then she goes on and compliments us in the first paragraph. And the second one is, "I know you guys are busy with all sorts of things, but I love a podcast that focuses on what you guys talked about in one of your first shows. My art is great. Why won't anyone hire me? And by the way, that is the best episode you guys have ever done. Thanks to Will Terry."
I feel like there's some embellishment.
I might have added that last part.
I do not think she said
The idea of self audits is great. And I'm taking to heart the idea of just learning my craft better for a year. But I'd like to know, as an artist taking your courses, the best methods to take and absorb your classes and continually be improving throughout that year, especially as someone who only has a few hours left in a day after work to learn and get better. So what I thought we would do is break this into kind of two parts, the first part being probably the majority of the podcast, and then the second part being the smaller chunk. And I think what we'll do in the first part is talk about how to be the best art student you can be. And then in the second part, we'll talk more about how to get the most out of our SVS classes. That way, if anybody's listening who just doesn't care about taking our classes, they can enjoy this podcast, and then they can cut and run on part two.
Sounds good.
So there you go, Lee. It is how to be the best art student. That's our topic for the day.
All right, lead us in.
So I strip mined some of what we had done in our third Thursday last year, I believe. And I got the good stuff out, but I thought I would introduce this in a more creative way, and it's either going to work or it's going to bomb.
You should explain what Third Thursday is, because that could be kind of confusing.
Oh, yeah. Third Thursday was what 3-Point Perspective is now on YouTube.
Yeah, it was the first iteration of this, which
actually was it on YouTube?
I think it was just
we just recorded them. We've got
a webinar.
Yeah, and those are all available on our site at svslearn.com right now.
Yeah, so it was a live webinar that people could attend live, and then we put the recording of it on YouTube. So if you missed it, you could watch it on YouTube. And we did it once a month for, I don't know, like 2 years.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
We didn't like being on camera or something. Is that why we stopped?
No.
We're getting derailed.
Conversation we're going to have.
Okay. We're not going to get derailed on that. That's what that was. See, Lee, you asked, and then we wanted to go deep on what Third Thursday. Okay, so what I'm going to do, rather than introduce each bullet point, what I'm going to do is say, I'm going to say what art students I've had that are from the bad perspective that aren't good art students. I'm going to say what they're either say, what they would either say or think. Mm-hmm. And then I want you guys to comment on that person. So I'm going to be the, I'm going to act out the person who is the bad art student, the person who's not getting it, doesn't understand the mindset. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Sounds
good. Let's do this.
Okay. I'm going to art school to get a degree.
Okay.
Oh man.
What's wrong with that?
Okay. So you want us to respond to what you're saying?
I said this is going to either do well or bomb. And so far,
now we just got to figure out the format. You've got this whole thing in your head and we're trying to extract it.
Yeah. You have to figure out what's in my head.
Okay. First off, you know, in all the years that I worked for studios and had to look at portfolios and be on the team that like kind of picks people who we're going to hire, never once, you know, did we look to see if they had an actual degree. It was always portfolio first, portfolio, portfolio. Let's look at their portfolio, see if they can do the work. Then it was an afterthought thought to see, oh, what school did they go to? And even then we didn't check to see, did they graduate from that program? Maybe it was assumed that if they had a finished polished portfolio that they had graduated, but it wasn't a thing that we had looked at. Mm-hmm. So the degree, as far as the real world is concerned, in concept art or in children's books or anything like that, doesn't matter. All that matters is, can you do the work? It's really a meritocracy. It's all based on how well you can, you know, perform the task.
Okay, so what's wrong?
What with was that word there?
What?
A meritocracy.
Boom.
Yeah.
If you can use that in Scrabble, you would win every time.
As long as the Y landed on the triple letter.
So going to your, speaking to your point, Jake, would you say then that people who have gotten far enough in a degree program should quit?
Here's what I would say is, you know, if it's your last semester and there's no like job opportunity, I would just say finish it out, right? But if there's a job opportunity that is available and it's what you're going for, it might not make sense to turn that job offer down just to finish out that last semester. You know, it might make more sense to take the job. And then if you're ever in a position to, you can go back and finish that semester. But I'm pretty sure once you are working in the field that you're going for, and you're good, and you know, if you're already getting a job offer while you're a student, then you're probably good. Then the work's just going to continue to come, and I don't think you'll even look back, unless you want to teach at some point for a university. If there still are universities in 10 years or 20 years, then you're going to want a degree.
Yeah, I'm looking right now on, because I used to, when I was teaching senior portfolio, I would always go and just kind of pull up some different job wanted kind of boards and see what the requirements were. And I remember, like, this was like 5 years ago when I used to work at the university, so maybe it's changed a little bit now, but a lot of them that were in-house did say a degree, which is weird because I'm on board with what you're saying, but the ones that I was seeing in-house did have that occasionally. So what do you think about that?
Oh, if a job that you're going for says you have to have a degree.
Yeah. I mean, those were just the ones that were in-house, like basically entertainment design jobs. And a lot of those were leaning towards the 3D kind of, you know, concept art / 3D artist. And they would say that they want at least a bachelor from some kind of some kind of focus on that. Do you think that was just a way to weed out people? And maybe if you're good enough, the company wouldn't care really, but that's just a way to weed out people.
Yeah, totally. Like if you're good enough and you show up with a portfolio and they're going through them, above everything else, what I'm trying to say is they're going to look and see if you can do the work, especially if you already have some experience under your belt too. Mm-hmm. Like
Here's one. So I'm looking right now while we're talking. It says advanced artist, concept designer, Monolith Productions. This is in Kirkland, Washington. And this one says, what do we require from you? First one, BA in art or related field or equivalent experience. Well, there you go, I guess.
Mm-hmm. There's also stupid companies that don't hire a lot of artists that have, like, you know, company guidelines, like IBM. I remember IBM was hiring for a few artists because they had a, I can't remember what the project was, but when I was getting out of school, a lot of my peers were going over and interviewing over there, and I interviewed over there and didn't get the job. But and it was based on my grades. I didn't have the best grades in college. I had good grades in my art classes, but they were like, well, out of all the GPAs that we can pick from, yours definitely isn't shining and glowing here, you know? And there, I mean, that's, isn't that predictable for a company like IBM? You know what I mean? Like, aren't they the ones who said, why would anybody want a personal computer in their home? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there will be companies that want you to get a degree, but kind of where I was going with this is, what would you say is the discrepancy between the person who, you know, who let's take person A and person B, who are both going, they're both in the same class, both in the same art school, both at the same major, everything, same classes. And to me, I don't know how to ask this, so I'll just describe it. But basically, in my mind, you could have two people that graduate from that school, and they both get the same degree, yet one could have easily in their studio classes worked 2, 3, 4, even 5 times harder than the other person. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is like, basically your question is, if somebody's got their eye, if the prize is the degree, then they're going to get killed in the professional market,
right?
Because they just don't have the focus in the right place.
But they got that paper, you know?
Yeah. And mom and dad will be happy. This is the hard part about art, is that, you know, you're dealing with outside forces as well. And a lot of times parents don't understand these jobs yet. And our job market is changing so rapidly, and our education choices are changing so rapidly that it's hard for parents to keep up. And, you know, when the parents were going through college, that was just the thing that you do. And it may be hard for them. And so, you don't know, there's a lot of external forces that cause people to need the degree.
Yeah.
But in actuality, it's not important at all.
Right. So the learning is what's important. And so the mindset that you should be trying to get as a student is, you know, don't have your eye on that degree. Get the degree, but the degree should be something you toss in your drawer and don't even think about.
You know, the degree should be a byproduct,
right,
of you trying to get the experience to get a job,
right,
you know? Like, and I wouldn't, you know, looking at the college kids that I work with as assistants and stuff, like everything that they're doing to get that degree is totally going to help them to get a job. But
right,
at the end of the day, it's not the degree that gets them the job. It's everything that they're doing to get that degree.
Right.
So like their you know, their senior project and, you know, the art show that they have to do or whatever they have, you know, that whole thing, that final project that they have to present and share, like that should be the thing that really gets an employer's eyes on what you're doing and interested in you.
Yeah.
Not so much that degree.
Well, and I remember being in school and having a lot of my peers, I would give myself assignments, you know, I would in between assignments, or I would not do an assignment that I thought was dumb. And that was both good and bad, I would say, because I had an amount of arrogance that I look back on and I go, you know, that could have backfired as well. However, when I was a senior, I remember thinking, this assignment is not getting me closer to the portfolio that I'm looking for. Therefore, I'm not going to do it, and I'm going to do a different assignment. So I didn't choose to not do assignments based on laziness. I chose to do a different assignment because I felt it would get me closer to that portfolio. And I remember my classmates were always freaked out when they'd see me working on something that they didn't know what it was. And they're like, they thought they were missing something, you know, like, what assignment is that, you know? And then, and I would tell them, and they'd be like, you're just doing this on your own? And I'm like, it's legal, I think, right? Like why aren't, and I would ask some of them, like, why aren't you? This, when we get out of here, we, like, I'm planning on trying to freelance, you know? So, like, I have a limited amount of time before this experience of college ends, and I need the best portfolio I can possibly have. And so, yeah, I've only got 3 months left before I either get a full-time job doing something I don't want or really work hard at this freelance thing. And I think that mindset really helped me.
I think there's a middle ground, though, to disregarding your teacher. And most of the time, I mean, I did the same thing, except for I always did it with the, I tried to get approval first before I veered from the assignment. And I would just shoehorn whatever they were kind of saying into my pitch, and then I'd do what I want to do anyway.
Right.
I remember doing the same thing, too. It's like, you know, I remember there's an assignment where we were supposed to do a self-portrait as ourselves as an animal. And
wow,
yeah,
that's an awful assignment. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly what the purpose of that assignment was. It was basically the gist of it was to do something creative with a portrait, you know, more light and shadow, understanding that, how that works, and think creatively. But I wanted something more concept arty for my portfolio, so I, instead of doing, you know, a portrait mode from the, you know, the chest up of me as whatever animal I picked, I did this environment scene, and I was one of the characters in the environment as, you know, an animal like trudging through the environment. And so I turned it in, and my teacher's like, it's not what I was asking for, but you did a good job, but not what I was asking for. But that went into my portfolio and helped me to get, you know, a concept art job. So
what, hey, Will, what animal would you say Jake would be best as a self-portrait?
A horse.
You think, oh, wow, you answered that quick.
Yeah.
You thought about
that. Well, I was thinking that's what he drew.
This is not the first time Will's thought about that.
What would I be? What's my animal?
Oh, what is, like a squirrel?
Aardvark. I was thinking aardvark.
So I'm like that paranoid squirrel from Ice Age. Is that kind of how you see me?
Well, that's not too far off, actually. You would squirrel away a lot of nuts and resources.
I'm scrappy like that too. So
yeah. Oh yeah. And you'll stop at nothing to get what you, try to get what you want.
what would Will be?
Oh no.
Oh boy. What would Will be? Like a walrus?
Probably. I was thinking like a Clydesdale. Walrus. You know, majestic.
Oh wow. You know?
Walruses are amazing.
Let's throw this to our audience. You guys, if you want little side bet SVS challenge, if you guys can draw us as an animal that you see us as, a lot of you guys maybe don't even know what we look like. Scary. So just draw it based on our personality, and let's just see what we get.
Here's the thing: a walrus hangs out on the beach next to the ocean. Okay, got you there, Will.
True.
They don't like to get pushed around. They're just kind of chilling, doing their thing. Got you there,
facial,
Will?
Hair.
They got facial hair. They got these enormous teeth. Got you there, right?
They bark a lot, like at certain times. They're quiet for the most part, but then they start barking. Is that a walrus or a sea lion? I don't know.
And just horrible, horrible body odor. So
check all the boxes.
I picture him being good at racket.
Hey, one other side note before, because now we're totally off track. Totally. Sorry. Why in art school do they make you draw yourself so much? It's bizarre. I mean, you can draw anything, and there's so many concepts and cool stories out there. I remember being in art school and drawing myself so many times during the foundation. It's annoying.
Like looking in the mirror. I mean, I could see it for, like, you know, mining expressions and stuff.
As an animator, yeah, for sure. For that. I get that. But there's a practical part that's different than a self-portrait. Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I honestly, it's probably just easy. You know, I'm sure what happens is, like, go find someone to draw. And then the student's like caught up and like, who do I find? Who do I, you know, who's going to want to sit for me?
Yeah,
that's true. And there's no criteria. You can't, like, if they, no matter who they draw, if they bring it to class and you don't have that person, you can't even really judge how they did.
Right. Okay, I'm going to have to take the reins because we're never going to get
there. Okay, go ahead.
It's just like our just a regular meeting when we jump into Skype. Theoretically, there are people listening, though, and they want a little structure, so I'm going to help them. Okay, here's the next one. This homework assignment shouldn't take me more than 12 hours based on university guidelines for out-of-class, in-class ratios.
Go, Lee.
I'm trying to think of what that would equal in terms of a personality type. Like they're stuck. They're not willing to go beyond what the thing calls for.
Yeah. Well, like how long should an assignment take?
Right. And that I sort of blame on instructors. And then I also kind of blame a newer generation of student that is used to very immediate results. Not that I wasn't, but I think it's gotten worse since then. That, I have students come in and they're sort of tired and they're like, man, I worked on this all night. And I was like, oh, how far long did you work on it? And they say, 3 hours, 4 hours. And that is nothing. I mean, for me, when I was in school, my average was about 12, and I knew that it was about 12. Sometimes it'd be 15, sometimes it'd be 9, but pretty close to 12. I could get, that's for from putting gesso on the board all the way to the finishing touches and getting it ready to present. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a difference. They have to learn what an appropriate amount is, and somebody's got to either tell them or show them, because you're not going to know.
You sound like the old grandpa. Back in my day.
It took 30. Well, when I went to the Louvre, there were people doing life-size master copies, and it would take weeks.
Right.
So,
I would say the correct answer is as long as it takes. So, right? I mean, like, what happens if you're working on an assignment and it completely fails, and you've spent 9 hours, and you've budgeted 12? You have choices, right? You can keep working on the failing image, but probably the reason that it's failing is because it was designed poorly to begin with. So it's like a plane falling out of the sky where wings broken off of it. You can work the controls as long as you want, but you're going to eventually go in. You're not going to save it. You could work 3 hours and try to get as far as you can, but that's not enough probably, right? Maybe right. It is. But what if it's not? Then you have to sacrifice something else. And how many students do you think aren't up on all the new Netflix series and movies out, right? Or have been gaming online with their clans or their teams or whatever?
Well, there's another problem that goes along with being a student that I saw that kind of shoehorns into this, and I hope I'm not derailing a future point you're going to make. But it's the speed class taker, where they want to take 6 or 7 classes a term, because then they'll graduate like 2 terms early or something. But this is like they want the degree, but they want it faster than the normal mm-hmm. capacity, and so all of a sudden they don't have that luxury of they've crammed so many classes in that each class has to be done in 3 hours with homework, because they have 6 classes, right? And so cumulatively that's 18 hours of homework plus classwork time. And so it's just it's a uphill battle for those students. So if you're one of those students, you got to bail. I'd recommend taking fewer classes and really giving yourself time to not only do the work, but also to do the work, mess it up, and then do it again.
Yeah, mess it up and do it again. I love the example that we've talked about it before. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast, but I know we've done it in the Third Thursday, where I think we showed the drawing you did, Jake, of the animals flying.
Oh, right.
And then your friend Scotty Young said, it's good, but mm-hmm. you can do better than that. And then you did. And the second pass was amazing.
It's like he gave me permission to be creative on it.
Right. You know,
the first pass was sort of like the clip art version of what the drawing should
be. It was predictable.
Yeah, predictable. Yeah. And then the second one was just, the pulling out all the stops, creative version. I actually spent maybe twice as long or 3 times as long on the second one, because I had a really good idea. I want to add too, like I drew my first graphic novel I drew was 170 pages long. And I timed it out. The amount of time I spent on each page was between 10 and 14 hours. So, and I did that in about a year, So, and that was also while working a full-time job. So it's like, you know, if you want something really bad, you have to get used to doing what it takes mm-hmm. to get that thing done. And maybe college is the best place for you to learn that and to go from, you know, amateur to professional by one doing these assignments, seeing what you learn from that assignment. How could I have done it better? How could I have spent more, you know, more quality time on it? How could I spend more focused time on it? And to the point where you don't bat an eye when, you know, you have to redo something or go back into it and fix it to get better. And it's really not about the time. It's just about getting a good, you know, good
product. Let me ask both of you this of the illustrations that you do in a year. So we're talking about all the book illustrations and any other assignments that you get. And then maybe the ones, the personal stuff that you do of all that stuff that you do in a year. What percentage is your best work, would you say, or is better than the rest that you really love a lot more than the other stuff you've done?
If I get two winner illustrations, I mean, I know what you're saying right there. It's like, there's a certain threshold we're all at as pros and where it's going to be okay. Probably no matter what we do, it'll be all right. But those ones that are special that people respond to more than any, right, and you kind of have a special place. If I get two a year, I'm stoked.
And how about you, Jake?
You know, that's, I haven't thought about that, but you're right. It's like every year I do one, two, or three pieces where I feel like I leveled up and these are like my benchmark for mm-hmm. the year. But I crank out, you know, 100 right. drawings that year.
And so my reason for asking that is to tell the student who's, you know, worried about how much time they're spending and all, that you guys are like high level pros and you're not able to crank out the super amazing stuff every time. Like everything is professional that you're cranking out, but not all of it stands out in your body of work. And so to me, the takeaway is for a student that you have to know that even if you're working really hard, you're not going to always be able to crank out these amazing things, which to me means that's more of a reason why you need to be always working really hard, is because in order to get a few in a year, right?
Right. It's by the numbers. You got to do a bunch.
Yeah. Yep.
On another side of that same topic too, is the student who, when I would see senior portfolios and I'd be going through their work and it all looks really good, cohesive. And then I'd come across one piece that looks super over-rendered. And it was funny because this wasn't just one student or two students. This was a huge demographic of students, huge percentage of students. And I started looking for that piece when I would be going through the portfolios. And then I finally found out that it's from the student's rendering class and they spent so long on it that they couldn't let go of it, which was an interesting dynamic too. Just because you spend a long time on it doesn't mean it's one of those pieces that are your top shelf piece.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Cool. Okay. Next. This is how I make my art. It's unique, and my teachers need to help me with my vision.
Okay, so here's what I like.
Jake just put on his dad voice. That's like one of the first times I've heard that.
You could hear me like adjusting the belt loop, the belt up, you know, on my pants. All right, son, sit down. Papa's got, you know, some words. Here's, you can say that after you've learned the fundamentals, okay? After you've learned composition, light and shadow, some color theory, some anatomy, you know, human form, perspective, proportion, you know, line quality. Once you've figured out all that stuff and you've shown you could do that, then you have the freedom to say, like, I now want to do my style this way, and this is how I draw. Up until then, that's a crutch, and it's something you can lean on to make it so that you're not learning like the proper fundamentals of art. So it's kind of like, you know, I like comparing art to music, because, you know, if someone rolls up to a piano and they just start plinking around on it and there's no tempo and there's no like pacing to it and there's no crescendo or anything like that. And maybe, you know, the tune isn't even the right keys, and they just say, no, this is how I play. You know, you can get away with that once you can actually play,
right?
You know, Chopin, right? Right. You know, once you've proven you can go through and do that, then you could step back and mess around.
But yeah, if you think Miles Davis can't play a standard tune, you know, in his heyday, it'd be crazy.
Right.
He's improvisational genius. I have a quotable quote here, so you guys might want to get out your pencils. Don't let your style be the byproduct of weakness.
Yeah. That was me. I've talked about that before. I actually thought that my inability to draw well added to my style. Like I was valuable because I sucked. I had told myself that.
You wait, say that again. You're valuable because you could draw back then, or you couldn't. Oh, so you were trying to get around your lack of ability.
I created an out for myself. I created a story that made me feel good, but that was false. That was a lie.
Yeah.
And we all lie to ourselves all the time. It's fun, and yeah, it makes it easier to go back to that game.
Well, it's like Marie Grand Prix, right? Isn't she the illustrator for the Harry Potter mm-hmm. books?
Yeah.
Like, you look at those and they're really well done, but, you know, perspective isn't really an issue. It's not something that she's concerned mm-hmm. about. And even going between like objects with dimension and objects that are like flat designy, you know, at one point, you know, at some point you could look at that and just say like, this person has no idea what they're doing, but she can, you know, she could draw that way if she needs to. It's just she's using these different elements and these tools to convey like a certain feeling and a certain design, a certain mm-hmm. style. She's earned that because she knows what right. she's doing.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting that I've had a lot of students that fit this category where I think they think that their teachers are there to help them with their vision or with their journey in art, the way that they're making it. What they don't realize is, you know, writing is an art form, right? You know, creative writing. And how many writers would go into a college writing class and say, you know, I don't need you to tell me what's wrong. I just need you to help me with my vision. You know what I mean? Like, that's not how writing is taught. A writing paper comes back with like, you know, all kinds of marks on it for, you know, bad sentence structure and bad grammar and, you know, not following a thought through, you know, having a bunch of different main ideas in one paragraph and different things like that. So we teach a lot of those same, I mean, all art is the same. It has a lot of the same themes, and we teach a lot of those principles. If you don't know what they are, you're going to have these problems that are constantly occurring in your work. And yeah, that's just a bad mindset.
You can't get around it. You're never going to get mad because you have good draftsmanship or that you learned how to draw something yeah. well.
Okay, next.
I just want to add too, like, this year and last year, actually, I've been practicing and refamiliarizing myself with anatomy and like how the muscles work together. I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of it, but I knew there were areas that were fuzzy for me. So I've just been going in and relearning this stuff, and I've already seen my drawings like level up since I've been studying this stuff. It's amazing. So it's like, if you think you're done learning, you're not.
Yeah.
Like, this should be a lifelong pursuit.
Yep. How do you teach that to someone who is obviously, like, my next one here is, you know, I'm one of the best in the class and I don't even have to try that hard. How, these are all related, you know? But how do you make someone aware when they are so far off like that?
It's a tough one. I noticed a dynamic in my classes that a lot of times the best students were somehow the easiest ones to teach in a weird way. They would be willing to accept advice and willing to step back and look at it differently. And some of the students that were struggling would have the most solid opinion that I couldn't get through to. I couldn't get them to switch their vantage point or their perspective on it. That's tough.
Yeah.
You just got to be open and listen to, be able to listen to feedback and be able to change how you see something.
What if someone says, you tell them this and they say, well, I'm teachable, you know, and they're just not.
Yeah. The worst part is you won't know if you're one of those people because it's ignorance is bliss in that kind of situation. They don't know they're that kind of student. They think they're open. Right.
Yeah.
I came up with a, when I was teaching at UVU, I identified all these problems that I noticed my students had. And I would try to talk to them sometimes. And let's say you've got 15, 20 students and you've got, every year it's the same. You've got five that get it, that are working really hard, that are committed. And maybe it's only three, but there's a couple more that are doing pretty good, but it's somewhere around a little handful. And then on the other end, there's a handful that I don't even know why they're there. And I don't think they even know why they're in there. And then there's the ones in the middle. And I've only seen in 9 years teaching over there, I think I've only seen maybe three or four students that went from the lower to middle section to the high section, you know?
I got a good story there.
Yeah. But I'll tell mine and then I want to hear yours. Yeah, this one girl, I hope she's listening. I don't want to call her out by name, but I bet she would know who she is. But I had her 1 year and she didn't seem to care at all. And then I think it was either the next year or the year after that, because I think I had her for 3 years. All of a sudden I saw her work on Instagram. I'm like, that's not the same person. There's no way. And it's like a light switch went off. And I actually had her interviewed her with a couple other students on my YouTube channel a couple years ago. And I asked her, you know, like, what was it? And she just said, she just looked around and realized that she wasn't turning in. Like she finally could see that her work wasn't at the same level as everyone else's in the class. In her class, and it got real because she was getting ready to graduate, and she was like, "If I don't really start taking this seriously." But I'm puzzled as why. I still don't know why she was able to do that, but most just kind of continue on down that path of kind of doing nothing. Anyway.
Yeah, something shifted for her, and I don't know. I had this student in my first term class at Art Center, and I was bad. Remember, I had just started drawing and painting, so I was pretty bad. But this guy in particular was definitely not strong in these basic classes. And I actually, when I was teaching in Portland, I would show my students this progression because I just happened to have samples of it all because I was taking pictures and keeping images and stuff. But I'm not going to mention who this person actually is on this. But we would share our entrance portfolio, you know, because it's hard to get into Art Center and there's a certain amount of rejection rate. So it was always a thrill to see what got in and what, you know, what people were doing. And everybody's showing theirs and everybody's looked great. And then his came in and it just wasn't that sharp. It wasn't that good. Just kind of following suit with the work he was turning in class. But he was a diligent worker and his kind of mode of operation is if they tell me to draw something, I'm going to try to do it as good as I can. I'm not going to question the assignment or anything like that in the early stages. And so he's kind of clumsy those first couple of terms and definitely not a standout. Nobody would notice the work. But about term four, I remember, you know, everybody puts their stuff up and all of a sudden, you know, people are kind of standing around one in particular, go over there. It's like, there's his name at the bottom. You're like, hey, that's pretty good. And then the next couple ones would fall down. You know, he's non-issue. We wouldn't see him that much in terms of the good work that people are gathering around. And then, you know, term four, all of a sudden he's starting to hit it more and more. By the time we left, man, he was smoking. He was so good. And it was always, I always gave this lecture in the beginning of my sophomore level classes in Portland because he really worked the whole thing. He did it exactly like you're supposed to. He did all the foundation stuff, and he said, man, if they want me to draw a ball, I'm going to draw as good a ball as I can, or a cube, or, you know, two-point perspective, all that basic stuff. And then as we started to segue into personal voice, he's like, okay, why did I do all that stuff earlier? How am I going to use that to express myself? And he started to have the chops to do that. He became a concept artist, and man, he was just incredible. And so he did exactly what you're talking about. Well, he went from the low end to the high end, and it was so motivational to see somebody actually do that. And it was not through talent. It was through sheer hard work and being open to your approach and to listening.
It's cool when it happens, isn't it?
Golly, it's impressive.
And that's why I think it's one reason why we get excited when we teach is, I can speak for myself. The reason I love teaching is to watch people go through these transformations. And the reason is because I went through that transformation. I didn't feel like it was, like I was a natural. I felt like I was really natural in blending colors and painting with colors and understanding color harmony. That always felt very natural, but drawing and design was so foreign. And when things started to click, I started developing a lot of opinions on how to teach it, how to help other people learn it. And, you know, some of my methods probably don't work for other people, and some of them do. And that's the cool thing about teaching, is you can find teachers that kind of speak your language, and they have different methods of explaining basically the same principles, but in different ways. So it's cool.
I have a quick list of how to know if you're good or not. Can I give that real quick? Because that's the problem, right? Is you may be in school and you're like, I don't know if I'm one of the good ones or the bad ones, or I don't know where I am in between this. Here's the common denominator, and you guys can argue with me or not if you agree with this. The five common denominators of if you start to become good enough to make a living at this. Number one, people gather around your work or comment if you're posting things online in an unsolicited way. You are not asking for feedback. You're posting, or you're in class and you're turning it in, and people naturally gather around your work without you pointing it out. That's mm-hmm. step one. Mm-hmm. Step two, you start winning things. You enter a little contest here and there. You'll start placing first, second, or third. You'll start hitting some of these, you know, you'll start to win things or start to be appreciated in that way. Number three, you start getting scholarships. The second one is you start getting unsolicited recommendations. So a teacher may say, hey, I want to introduce you to this other teacher. You might want to take this class, or, you know, that kind of thing. You start getting, and it's unsolicited. People will naturally start to do it. The third one's you start winning things. The fourth one, you start getting scholarship or some kind of financial backing in a school-based kind of way. And the fifth one is you start getting paid. Even if it's a small amount, you get people asking for you to do things for money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
It's pretty consistent. I mean, of the hundreds and thousands of students that have kind of seen, those five things happen in that specific mm-hmm. order most of the time. There's always an outlier, but
yeah, I think it's the kids that put their heads down and just work, just put in hours and hours and hours and hours. They're also aware. They're looking around and seeing what their goal is. They're not just putting their head down and creating in a vacuum, but they're looking around. I had a few more here, but I think I'm going to skip them. And basically, I'm going to kind of pick them up with a last little anecdotal story so that we can go into part two. But I created a list that I was going to share with my class on when you say this, this is what I'm thinking. And I made it as a handout, and it bombed because it hit too close to home. But I didn't know how to tell. I was telling my kids, you know, like year after year, I would say, hey, you know, when you do this or when you say this, this is what I don't know how to respond necessarily, honestly, because quite frankly, I feel like it'll be embarrassing if I say this out loud in front of everybody. So sometimes I can't believe you said this or did this, but this is what I'm thinking. And so I made this list. If you do this, this is what I'm thinking. I'm going to share that list with you guys now. But a lot of it's the stuff we've kind of already gone over, but these are signs that you're not a committed art student. Okay, so chronically late, right? So these are things you've either said, you either art student either says or does. That's these. Some of these are really obvious, right? Chronically turning in unfinished work. Talking during lectures. I can't tell you how many students I've had that are just in the back jabbering the whole time. And it's like, what's funny is like, I've spent hours developing lectures. And, you know, I would complain to my wife about this and, you know, and she would just simply say, you're not there for those people. You know, you're there for the ones that are listening.
Great advice.
She's like, don't be offended.
Yeah, that's really good.
They're not there for you. They don't really want to become illustrators. But for you listening right now, if you're always talking during a lecture, then it's kind of a narcissistic thing to think that what's going on in your head is definitely more important than the teacher. Now, I get it. Some teachers suck. And you might feel like you have one of those or... But I mean, to me, and I'm sure to you guys, you've probably experienced that too. You know that you're giving out these gems that you've worked on for a long time and they're not getting any of it. Making excuses during critiques. So everything that you, as a teacher, explain that you would do differently, there's an excuse coming right back over why it needed to be that way, right? Asking the teacher to change the assignment. And now, if you do this, you know, if this is the exception, then I'm not talking about you. But if you're always making excuses during critiques, if you're constantly trying to get the assignment changed to something that you feel would be more comfortable, then you're not willing to work on the things you're not good at. And you shouldn't be spending time working on the things that you're good at. You should be spending time working on your deficiencies. How about this one? The last person set up to paint. So it's a painting class. It's like, remember in elementary school when they got out the paints and you were really excited? And I'm always surprised at how many students would show up and they a half an hour of class would pass before they'd ever, you know, start painting. Because they'd be visiting with their neighbor. Another one is... this is a good one. They feel guilty because they haven't made any progress on their assignment since the last time you gave them advice. So they come up and show you their sketch, the same exact sketch that you critiqued the last time. You ever had that happen?
Yeah.
And there, what I see there is like, I feel bad that I didn't do anything. So I'm going to show you this and talk to you so you think I'm engaged, but we both know I'm not doing anything. Which is really weird to me. Like,
we can see that a mile away, by the way. If you are one of those people, we see that a mile away. Even if we could agree with you and go along with it.
We don't want to say, hey, this looks like you haven't done anything since last time. At least it's hard for me to be that direct. Like, don't, and I'll even tell them at the beginning of class, if you haven't made any changes, don't bring it up and show me, because then I just feel like you think that by talking to me, I'll like you more or I'll give you a better grade or something like that. I don't know. It's weird. Wearing headphones during class. I mean, like if you think that like you paid to come to class, right? And you're there and half of your learning is going to happen from the people sitting around you because you're going to miss something and you're going to want to ask somebody. If you're not developing friendships and relationships, or you're not hearing the side conversations that happen in studio classes between the teacher and the students about something the teacher's working on a freelance project, or I mean, like that's where a lot of the learning is taking place, is not necessarily in the formal lectures, you know.
That's a good one. I usually headphones is just a sign, you know, it's basically a sign that says do not disturb.
That's a good point.
Save those for like your personal, you know.
Well, there'll be these dark, mysterious people in class. Have you ever had those, Lee? With the hoodie and the headphones.
Yeah. A Unabomber, like, look. You can't even...
Spider-Gwen or Miles is in your class, you know. Although Miles, they were outgoing kids in a lot of ways. These are more of the arty, you know.
I had a time where I brought the art director from Sony Entertainment in, and this was a graduating class. They were graduating within 1 year, and the guy from Sony, the art director from Sony, was hiring. And so he was down there with the lecture was, here's how to make me hire you. And we're, you know, he's 15 minutes in, he's doing his thing, showing his slides and stuff. And all of a sudden I hear, Jake, do you got a sound effect for me with the keyboard clicking?
No, I don't, but you can imagine it. Clickety clackety.
Oh my God. Clickety clack. So it was like a beacon to me. I mean, it couldn't have been louder. And I was furious. I mean, I let them have it after that was the only time I really lost my cool. I just couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable to me that somebody would be in that class at that stage and disrespecting this person that came down. What could they possibly be? They weren't typing notes. Mm-hmm. Cause I could say once I honed in on it, I could see their monitor.
They were in a Facebook argument, probably.
Yeah. Jeez. With Will Terry. So I understand the long typing, but,
anyway. Okay, a few more here. Overly critical during critiques, but their work was unfinished or sloppy.
Well, that's a good one.
And I think it's covering. I think I've seen a lot of students like that, and I think they are covering for their inadequacies.
Sometimes they give great feedback, and I'm kind of looking forward to getting theirs. And then we get there, and it's that half-baked kind of thing.
Packing up 15 minutes early. This is the class that you love. You should be in there painting. Leaving class early and then turning in scribble sketchbooks. That one bothered me so much is like you've wasted a really good sketchbook. Like, you know what I mean? Like if you don't want to do it, just don't do it.
So you're talking, what do you mean? Like a sketchbook, like their own personal
sketchbook? Yeah, well, I'd have a sketchbook assignment. And so they would basically be going through the motions where they would have to, the requirement for the class was to spend a half an hour per drawing. And you could tell that it was probably not even 5 minutes per drawing, you know? And so you'd see this scribble work and then you'd see other students. And I would even show them examples of like, this is a half an hour drawing. This is a really nice drawing, this one counts. This one over here doesn't count. You're not going to get credit for it. It's scribble. Yet I would still get scribble. So,
I gotta say, I never liked that assignment. So I would probably would have.
I didn't either, but it was part of the class that I didn't really have control over that. It was required.
I remember one time I was teaching, and this one girl was like, she was talking about another girl who's just a really good draftsman, just. Heads and shoulders above everybody else, not just heads. That's such a weird
shoulders in there too.
Yeah, shoulders in there too. Anyways, and she's just saying, "Oh, she's so good. She draws so good. I'll never be as good as her." And so, you know, I didn't know what to say to her. And as I made my rounds, I went to this girl that was so good. And I said, "Hey, I'm just curious. Like you're so dialed in on your sketching. Your drawings are so good. What is it? Like, how long have you been drawing? What have you been doing?" And she said, "Oh, basically since seventh grade, I've filled a sketchbook once a month." You know, and she was 22, 23. So we're looking at 7 years here of 8 years here of sketchbook after sketchbook after sketchbook. And she just had drawn way more than everybody else in that class. So, you know, that told me like it's part of it is just line mileage, getting a lot of drawing.
Did we talk about Kim Jung-gi on this podcast before? Because so to go along with what you're saying, Jake, we had that conversation about why he's so good. If you don't know who he is, you should look him up. Kim, K-I-M, Jung, and then Gi is G-I. He's the guy, if you're driving right now and you can't look something up, he's the guy that takes a brush pen and can draw for hours on a mural and out of his head, not using any reference. And all the whole drawing is in perspective and everything fits together and there's no mistakes. And he doesn't use any pencil lines in the beginning. He draws with ink and he's all over YouTube. He's all over the internet, but we were talking about him and we were kind of trying to decide like is he born with that ability, is it savant, like How did he develop that? And I think what we came up with is that he's just loves drawing probably more than even those of us who really love drawing. I mean, he just loves it so much.
Right. That's
all he does from morning till night. Just draw.
I think he loves it to the point where I don't think his life is balanced. And I love his work, and he's a really nice guy, but some of his work just seems, you know, I'll just
stop here. I want to hear the rest of that. Thing.
I'm just saying some of his work seems a little vapid. Like there's not a message. He's just drawing for the sake of drawing. It's like art skill for the sake of art skill, you know? Mm. Whereas I look at like James Jean, I look at his work and I feel like everything has a message or a story to it or something like that. And
now, do you think Kim could, if he, you know, wasn't doing the performance art part of what he does, can he design and execute a really nicely designed image that evokes more of an emotion from you, Jake Parker?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that comes down to like the artist's voice, right? So I feel like you look at a Kim Jung-gi illustration and you're just in awe of like the mastery of the execution, but there's no story there. There's no like message. And so I come away feeling a little empty. Like I want to see him use that ability for, you know, to make a statement and to tell us something instead of, you know, here's 500 people on a street, you know.
But we don't know anybody that can do what he can do at the same time, right?
Yeah, but I know what Jake is saying. I mean, that's how I feel about all the landscape painters who paint boats.
Yeah, it's like it's art, it's mastery, right? It's a beautiful picture of a boat, but I think that's why we're illustrators, right? Did I just say illustrator? Illustrators. I think that's why we're illustrators, because we love the story. We want to tell stories. We want to take someone somewhere. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Probably
in awe that you gave such a harsh criticism to Kim Jung-gi.
I'm in awe that you used the word vapid.
I'm two for two with new words for you.
Like a thesaurus in front of you. Now I'm getting intimidated. I need to like find some kind of word to throw out there. Vapid, by the way, now I just looked it up. Its use has gone down since the 1800s, so it's even more impressive than you're using.
Anyways, Kim Jung-gi could easily say about me, well, I just wish Jake would draw better, you know? So
wish Jake would draw more bucolic scenes like I do.
Oh, yeah. Wow. All right, I'm pulling up my thesaurus now.
Okay, let's jump into part two while Lee looks that up, bucolic. And
thesaurus. I'm not using yours. I'm going to get some of my own.
Let's talk about how an SVS subscriber or student can get the most out of what we're doing. And because that was basically the focus of the letter that I read in the beginning. This person only has a couple hours a day. How can they best utilize what we've put online?
Hey, can I go back before we go into the next section? There's just one more thing I wanted to add in terms of being a student at a university or just being a student in general. When you get to the junior senior level and you start on if there's ever a class to do well on, do well in the team assignments. Don't drop the ball when you have a group of people counting on you, because those, in at least in my experience, were the classes, you know, senior level classes where you're actually making something, and the people that drop the ball there sometimes never get hired because all the other people get hired. And then what do? They recommend their friends who performed well in those group assignments. And so I don't know if there's anywhere to put that in your kind of hierarchy, Will, but that's just something that I noticed, that, you know, if you're one of the students who underperforms in a group assignment, chances are not good for you. Did you guys see that, or did you guys do much group assignments?
I did horrible in mine.
See, just like Volterra, you don't want the...
I'm not kidding.
Did you do bad?
Because they paired me up. We only did one. So I'm 0 for 1, but that's without having like 10, we can't really tell how I would have done. But they paired me up with, we had to do a book cover, and it was with a graphic designer and an illustrator. I was the illustrator, and I got paired up with a graphic designer. Graphic designer was into gothic, the gothic look, and everything he did was black and dark and depressing. And like he could have done horror and like murder.
I can see what you guys are doing.
And I was doing these children's books, and I asked my teacher at the time, like, what were you thinking? And he's like, oh, we didn't think there would be any problem. Like, I'm like, you made the list, you paired people up, we were left over, you put us together, I got it, but I'm not doing it. And my teacher, who I'm really good friends with today, who hired me to teach at BYU many, many years ago, and we laugh about it today, but he, for a while, whenever we'd get together, he would say, boy, it was that one assignment that you just never did that really bugged us up there, that you just bailed on it, you know? And I was like, I was trying to get a portfolio together, and this was not going to get me any closer. And the guy that I was going to be working with, he's like, are you into this? And I'm like, I just don't see it. And he goes, yeah, me neither. And he goes, tell you what, give me an illustration, I'll slap type on it, we'll throw it in for the grade. And do you know who Vivian Flesher is? Yeah, so she was coming out to critique it. And that's why they were mad. It was because they didn't show well. You know, it wasn't. And I didn't care. I'm like, wrong assignment, wrong pairing. You know,
man, that's an execrable pairing. Execrable.
Nice try.
Execrable.
You make up words.
Nice try, Lee.
Execrable. I had to actually hit the little button that would say it, so I even know how to say that. Execrable.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So, what do SVS? What? How should they utilize our classes? Like, how? What's the best way for someone who's only got a couple hours a day to get the most out of what we're doing? Or maybe you can even attack it from how are people doing it wrong?
Okay, number one, it's not Netflix, so don't just turn on a video, have it play in the background while you're washing dishes, and think you're going to learn. A lot of these classes have assignments, and so your best bet is to go through and do those assignments. I would take notes. I'd along with your subscription, I would buy a sketchbook that's your note-taking sketchbook, and just have that be like your Bible for learning art, right? And so it will have all your notes in there for each class. It'll have, you know, some sketches, maybe even your homework to go with the classes, the assignments. But also hang on to that. And you know, if you go to a lecture, or if you find another artist talking on YouTube, or there's an interview with them, or it's a podcast or something like that, use that sketchbook as your notes for those things too. So I would do that. I would definitely go into it thinking like, this is going to be my, you know, my school, my personal curriculum that I'm going to be taking seriously. And then I would just carve out of your schedule, you know, actually put it on your calendar, whatever you have the time to do. So maybe it's an hour every day. Maybe it's you don't do anything until Saturday, and it's 5 hours on Saturday. But figure out what you could do, what's good for you. I would definitely like see what you could do daily, and then I would have one day of the week where you can actually sit down for 3 or 4 hours and do some, you know, some actual like deep work on your assignments, on the art that you're doing. So that's one approach. The other thing too is think about before you go in, like, what are your actual goals as an artist? A lot of times people don't have that clearly defined. They kind of think, oh, I want to work professionally. Do you really want to work professionally? Like, is that the dream of yours? And are you willing to sacrifice what it takes to do that? Maybe you want to get some freelance work here and there. Maybe you want to have a personal project that's yours, you know, that you can call your own, that you can put your name on it and be proud of it. Maybe you just want to, maybe art for you is a hobby and it's your release. It's your way to basically balance out your life a little bit. So it's not all work, right? So go into it thinking what it is you want and then attack the classes appropriately. And go into it with that, with sort of that mindset. Also, it wouldn't hurt to post your work on the forum. Even in the beginning, you could just say, hey, I just signed up. Here's where I'm at. What do you guys think I need to work on? Like, where are my deficiencies? It really helps before you ask that, that you are participating and you're sort of sharing and present before you ask something in return. But you know, once there's that give and take there, the forum is a great asset to getting feedback and getting like an eye on your work and seeing where it is you need to improve and what you need to do to get better. And then I would take the classes that attack those, you know, specific deficiencies that you have. So I know that's sort of my like spitball approach is how I would use SVS. This is something I shouldn't say it's a spitball. I've been thinking about this for a long time. So
yeah. One thing I'd like to add to what you were saying about not being Netflix. One of the weird things about watching somebody who's really good at what they do is it, when they're doing it, it makes it seem like you can do it. And I know that because when I remember when I was learning stuff, what's the guy's name? Now I'm forgetting it. The concept artist who everybody, he worked on Star Wars, not Doug Chang, but,
Ralph McQuarrie?
No. He worked on the later, this guy worked on the later Star Wars. He's like a famous concept art guy. Anyway, I'll remember it before that.
Daniel Simon?
No, keep going.
John Denver?
30 minutes of names.
John Denver.
Anyway, there's this guy, very famous guy. I can't believe I can't think of his name, but
Tiemens.
He has all, no. He's the guy, he did all the stuff for Noman in the early stages.
Oh, Craig Mullins.
Not Craig Mullins. Hold on, I'm going to know him now because this guy. Sorry, now I'm going to get derailed because I have to know what this guy's name is. Anyway, he's got a ton of how-to videos, and he's really good at the marker technique. He lays in some marker, then puts pen on top of it, and he's got tons with vehicles and environments and creatures and stuff. And every time we would watch it as a student, after he's done, I'm like, oh my God, I can do that. Like, yeah, I really thought that. And then I would go down to do it and I actually couldn't do it. And my point is watching is not doing. And there's a big gap there. And sometimes you might think something's easier than it actually is in practice. You have to put the pen or pencil or brush down. And I mean, on canvas or on paper, you got to get the marks going to get better. You can't just watch something.
That's great. And I would add one last thing to that, which is that if you've only got a couple hours a day, you should. What's that?
Feng Zhu.
Oh.
Feng Zhu.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
That was the next guy with dinner name.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in Singapore.
He started the really good. He's good. He's good.
So before I was so rudely interrupted.
Sorry. Hold on. Let me look up a word for interruption.
Gee whiz.
No, I would say
sorry about that.
To go cessation. Along with what we were talking about earlier.
That didn't even work.
I don't know what it even means yet. You guys have totally temporary out, or complete tell. Stopping. Secession.
You guys okay, are done.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up, Will. Come on.
I will get this thought out. If you guys have to email me, I'll send you guys an email. Those of you listening. No. If you've only got a couple hours a day, you can't, I don't think you should put the pressure on yourself to give yourself the same kind of deadlines of finishing your learning that someone in art school would give themselves. So if someone's got three studio classes and they're spending, you know, 9 hours a week in class, you know, and you've got a couple hours a week, you're not going to be able to keep that same schedule. So it might take you longer, but you're going to have the discipline to take one class at a time and really explore that class. And that's one of the things that we've found. A lot of people seem like they're running through it, like you already said, Jake. And then their work doesn't really show a lot of times the fact that they're putting all the principles that we've taught in this particular class into their work. And so we'll see their work and like, it doesn't really look like they really went through that class. And I think this is one of the challenges that, you know, if you're doing online school with us or with someone else, and it's not accredited, you know, we've purposely not gone through that process because we don't want to go down that road for a lot of reasons. And I don't want to go into all those reasons right now, but maybe that'd be another good podcast sometime. But basically, you're not competing in the same way, and you have to have the self-discipline to slow yourself down because we don't have tests. Maybe that will be something that we do in the future. We've actually talked about that. Maybe having not written tests, but, you know, illustration tests where you do an illustration and we actually have enough staff at that time that where we can go through and give you an actual critique. And we do some of that with our interactive classes right now, but something that's a little bit more for people who are just subscribing. The lots of different things we can do with SVS, but on your end, what you really can do is take it slow and make sure you're learning by looking at other people's work, by like what you said, Jake. I love that idea of posting in the forums. Our forums are really vibrant. And the thing that I've been really impressed with is the atmosphere in there is very supportive. It's not like I've seen in some Facebook groups where it seems like inevitably in Facebook groups, illustration groups, you get a mix of people in there that with varying interests and commitment levels. And then there's all the people trying to sell stuff that end up going in there. You know what I mean? And then there's arguments and politics and things like that. And we haven't seen that in our forums that I'm aware of, or it's been very rare. And it's a really nice community of people who are all striving to mostly become professionals and who are supporting each other and complimenting each other. It's actually hard sometimes to get an honest critique because I think people are, I'll see people say things like, well, I'm not one of the instructors at SVS, but in listening to them, this is what I think they would say. And I want to say, you guys don't have to be an instructor to give a critique. You know, like I know that you're hedging and that you're worried that someone's going to say, well, who are you? You know, but at the same time, someone else, if you give bad advice, someone else will jump in there and say, that's cool. But I would probably, you know, it's a discussion and you can look at the comments that you get and kind of read between the lines and kind of see if there's multiple people saying the same thing. But also, like Jake said, don't show up post work, ask for help and expect to get a lot of engagement, because when people tend to do that, they don't have any investment in that community. And so the best thing to do is to go in there and poke around and read a lot and maybe comment a lot on other people's stuff and then go for the ask later on.
Yeah. And if you do go for the ask, be specific about it. To post a piece and say, hey guys, how's the character design working? Or how's the hair working? Or something really specific. Don't just say, hey guys, here's an image. How do I make it better? Because those get the least amount of interaction.
Yeah. Good advice. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's our podcast for this week.
Good one, Will.
Thanks, you guys. Awesome. Good one. Fun.
I feel like I learned a little bit too. This is good. Like I was thinking, how can I be a better professional this whole time as well? And I think a lot of these things apply.
Well, at least you're better than Kim Jong-gi. So.
Gee whiz. That's the last time I ever critiqued somebody.
Take us out,
too. All right. Take us out. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Your hosts have been Will Terry, Lee White, and I'm Jake Parker. You can find Will Terry's work at willterry.com and go follow him on Instagram. It's @willterryart. You can find Lee White's work at leewhiteillustration.com. And go follow him at Instagram at Lee White Illo. And you can find my work at MrJakeParker.com and go follow me at Jake Parker on Instagram. Podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. You can find his website at AlexSugg.com. And show notes by Tanner Garlick. TannerGarlickArt.com is where you can find his work. He's a great illustrator. He's looking for work. So if you need someone to do some concept art or illustration, check his work out, see if it fits what you need to do. If you like this episode, please share it around, subscribe to it on iTunes, and leave a review. We read those reviews. We love those reviews. Even that one cranky person who didn't like our podcast, we appreciate that as well. we do love to hear what you think. If you want to get in on this discussion, log on to the SVS forums, svslearn.com forums that we were just talking about, where we post about each of these episodes in the forums so people can join in on the discussion there. And we'd love to hear your thoughts as well on how you were a student or how you could be, ideas that you have for being a better student. We think that'd be great. All right, I think that's it. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next episode.